putting on lipsticks, cutting curtains. I mean, like, I was insane. I was restless. I had so much energy. I was the curious of the curious. I wanted to know everything about everyone and everything, how things function.
For many years, thousands of Nepalis have been moving overseas with the hopes of a better education, job, and lifestyle. Some find success in conventional fields, while some carve their own paths. Who is to say one is better than the other? Success is a journey, not a destination. So come on this journey with me, where we connect with our Nepali communities living overseas and explore their conventional and unconventional paths. My name is Sankalpa Gurung, and this is Hamro Yatra.
And welcome to the 19th episode of Hamro Yatra. On our final episode for the year 2020, we have none other than international fashion model and singer-songwriter Varsha Thapa. Born in Kathmandu, Nepal, Varsha has walked countless runways in cities all over the world and appeared in prestigious magazines such as Vogue, Elle, Harper's Bazaar, amongst many. A true Sagittarius at heart, Varsha is spontaneous, values her freedom, and is unwavering in identifying and reaching her goals. With life as her mentor, her experiences and learnings can be heard in her first song, Maya, and her newly released EP, Adhuro. In this episode, we go over Varsha's childhood and how her curious nature has guided her to where she is today. Amidst our love for Pahela Dal, we explore her journey to self-love and drive to achieve what most of us would call impossible. I hope this episode encourages you to embrace your own shadows and create the life you want, wherever you are. As always, if you enjoy these conversations, please share with your friends and family. Remember to follow our Instagram page at hamro.yatra for updates, subscribe on Apple Podcasts, or Spotify, and leave us a 5-star review if you're feeling generous. Welcome to Hamro Yatra, Varsha. I am so excited that you could make some time for us today. I'm just trying to keep myself calm and centered so I cannot fangirl over you this entire interview.
No, please. It was my honor to be here. Thank you for having me. I mean, it's been such a pleasure just, you know, getting to know you, you know, just now, and like speaking to you, because we haven't spoken before, and just by what we have spoken, you seem like such a sweet person. So this is my honor. Yeah, of course.
I usually get started with some icebreakers. So if you could choose a superpower, what would you choose?
Oh my god, that's a hard one. Well, I would choose I don't know, that's so hard. I mean, I'd love to be like invisible, because that's always been like my childhood fantasy of like being invisible and being in people's private spaces. But I also would like to be like something that, you know, that could enter anyone's minds and, you know, understand their psychology, because I have always been the kind of person who's very interested by people's psychology, how they think and how they react and human behavior. I've always been fascinated by human behavior. So if I could be like this, you know, this tiny little cell that could enter people's minds and understand how it functions and how, what leads to what, that would be my human superpower. I guess my human little tiny cell superpower. Yeah.
That would be pretty awesome.
Yeah, that would be like super cool. I'd love to get inside like the greatest of the greatest people, you know, like Einstein or Oprah Winfrey, someone who's alive, and see how she kind of, you know,
operates.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And if you could have one dish for the rest of your life, what would you pick?
Dal bhat tarkari, and then achar, and you know, like tomato, kulbara ko achar, and then I also love aloo ko achar very, very much. And you know, yeah, if I could have that the rest of my, that's what I grew up eating. So you know, like, I could have that for the rest of my life. And also aloo tareko.
Yeah. Just out of curiosity, kalo dal ki rato dal?
Rato? Wait, what do you mean rato?
I mean like pahelo dal. Yeah.
Pahelo dal. Yeah, pahelo dal. Moelo is my favorite. I'm not a big fan. Like, my mom likes kalo dal, but I like moelo dal.
Same. I grew up having kalo dal, and every time mom makes kalo dal, I'm just like, can we have pahelo dal? Like, that's my favorite.
Yeah, exactly. That's how I am.
That's the only thing I'll make at home as well. I'm like, kalo dal, nah. Like, I'm not going to pretend to buy it.
Yeah, same. Oh, my God. Like, my mom has sent me kalo dal from home. Like, she packs my bag, and then she packs all of the dals, and then kalo dal goes straight into my shelf, untouched, throughout the year. Then she comes, visits me, and she's like, oh, my God, you haven't touched kalo dal.
Well, you can have it when you're here then.
Yeah, now you can cook it for me, mom, because it's also harder to cook, right?
Oh, yes.
Because it's like thicker and it's much harder.
But my mom's bought me this pressure cooker, so I just use that.
Oh, great.
Yeah, so people who actually don't use pressure cooker and make dal, I'm just like, wow, can you actually?
Yeah, it takes a lot of time.
Yeah, I always thought you need a pressure cooker to make dal because that's how they made it at home. But when people make it without pressure cooker, I'm like, oh, okay.
Very hard. It's very, very hard. Yeah. Super hard to make dal without pressure cooker.
Yeah. And if you could go back into time, into Nepal's history, like any moment that you want to experience for yourself or just see what it was like, which time would you pick?
Oh my God, 1970s? Duh. I am such a hippie. Like, if I was born, I mean, like, honestly, really looking back at the, you know, the trajectory of Nepal and the growth of Nepal, it has been tremendously growing over the course of years. However, like what we had back in the 70s, the kind of like free hippie era, you know, like hippie-ish kind of movement going on, and everyone's free and are able to do whatever they want to. And not that it's different in Nepal right now. Everyone's doing whatever they want to. Of course, there's more women's rights today, and there's more like rights for all kinds of, people and today, and all genders today, which I really, really appreciate. And I'm able to exercise these rights. However, I wouldn't be able to exercise those. That, just minus this, if this was just like also exercised back then, I mean, I would be like in the perfect era, because I would be free. I'd be like, and not that I'm not free now, but like I'd be in that time, you know, experiencing those moments with those, with that kind of air and, you know, the hippie-ish life.
The vibe is just different, isn't it?
Yeah, it's so different. The air is different. You know, everything was free. There were no rules and regulations about, you know, like the drugs and everything that are seen as drugs today. However, the drugs that the pharmaceuticals sell us is even harder and worse, like Xanax and all of these things. Vicodins are even worse than how they view the drugs today, like marijuana, let's say, or like any of the, you know, the mushrooms or whatever kind of. You know, these are all, you know, nature's drugs, nature's plants, what nature provided to us. And now we look at them as something that's dangerous. Back in the day, people didn't view them as dangerous. They were more like, oh, they're psychedelic drugs and they're taken. And, you know, you feel a certain way, you feel heightened sense of things, but then you come back to who you are.
Yeah.
You can't overdose on them like you can overdose on the pharmaceutical drugs today. So I think back in the day, people were more like, you know, kind of aware, and they had this kind of consciousness, and they were more free about it. And today it's more, restricted, and things are more boxed up, which I can't really relate to. I think I was born in the 50s, enjoyed the 70s, overdosed, died, and was born in the 90s. Yeah. That's how I feel. Like, I'm the 90s kid that, you know, it's going back to the whole cliche. I wish I was born in the, you know, 50s and 60s so I could enjoy the 70s. But it really is true. I would love you to have enjoyed that. I mean, maybe I have. That's why I have some vivid memories of like me being in that era and me kind of still wanting to live. And in some way, in the work I do, whether it's like the shoots I have or like the music I make, somewhere it lives, you know. Yeah. I really let it live.
Now, before we get into where you are today and your different projects that you're involved in, I wanted to ask you what your childhood was like. How were you as a child?
I, as what my mom says, and what I recall, I was very naughty. I was the kid who would be placed in one room. My mom would place me there. She would like maybe want to go do her own things or like bring something, bring milk from the kitchen. I would have then gone from one room to five of the rooms, putting on lipsticks, cutting curtains. I mean, like, I was insane. I was restless. I had so much energy. I was the curious of the curious. I wanted to know everything about everyone and everything, how things functioned. You know, I've gotten my hand cut by razors that my dad used when I was a kid, and then, you know, gotten into the sewing machine, gotten my, fingers, yeah, through the needle. I mean, I have been that kid who was just curious, you know, and I love, you know, I still try to kind of live that part of my childhood today, because I feel like a lot of attributes and traits have kind of been like, I've shed them off, like skin, you know, and a lot of societal, how do you say, norms and societal conditionings have been adapted by me.
Yeah.
However, I kind of now is like me kind of shedding the societal adaptations and the norms, and you know, being back in touch with my younger, whole, authentic self. And that young, whole, authentic self was crazy.
Yeah.
Insanity. My mom used to call me Tsotsake because I was so naughty. I was just like, I was hell, but they all loved me for who I was. And they don't regret it. And my mom was like, you know, she's the way she is because she's, you know, she's a curious little girl who wants to know about the world. And I always had this mindset that the world is my oyster. I need to go figure out what the world is, ever since I was a kid. And that's the kind of mindset I kept growing up as well. I never let go of that.
Yeah, I think it's so important to hold on to that play side of yourself as well, because when you're growing up, people say, oh, you need to grow up. Like, you know, you need to stop doing these things, have all these responsibilities. Yeah, like sort of you need to take care of yourself, be able to sustain yourself.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you need to be able to enjoy what you've been working so hard for.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I think the mistakes that parents make is that they put on their own pressures and their own, you know, failures of life or whatever it is, the kind of, you know, mindset of life.
Expectations
onto their kids. And their kids are just there because they haven't even seen the world. They don't know what the world is about. They're just living in the moment, trying to have fun and be who they are and just really enjoy life the way it was meant to be enjoyed. And when the parents and the society and the school and the peers and education puts all of these pressures on students or kids, they start developing this, you know, this onion-like shield and then kind of forget who they are on the core. So what I'm trying to do now is kind of unveil all of these shields and these cover-ups that I've grown over the course of years and just, you know, be me. And me, who I was as a child, was this super curious, naughty little girl, and that's who I want to be all my life.
Bring back the curiosity.
Very, very curious. I want to stay very curious, almost like I don't know anything about life.
And how did you end up in India for your bachelor's?
So I studied in a boarding school in India from the seventh grade to the 10th grade. Because before that, I was studying in elite school at Lamatar, which is now Sivatara.
Oh my, I went to Shivatara.
Oh my God. That's my school, honey. That's not yours.
You went to Sanipa, not in Lamatar. When I was in grade 9 or kid 10, that's when like Shivatara bought Lamatar school.
Yeah.
But like we'd go on like field visits and stuff. Like, yeah.
Well, that's my school. Okay, so that's my school. That was my school from the, I don't know, LKG, UKG one. Because I went to boarding school very young, like first grade, I think. And then, first grade to the seventh grade, half of seventh grade, I was studying at Elite Islamatar. And then the whole Maoist thing happened where they came and like kind of did a lot of things. And then my mom got really scared, and then she put me to boarding school in Dehradun. Mm. And then 7 to 10, I was in Dehradun. And then I went back home, and then my mom was like, well, what are you going to do? You know, like, do you want to go, you know, because my mom was like, do you want to go study at Mayo Girls School in Rajasthan? And I was like, I don't know, you know, I've been away from you the whole time. So we were kind of deciding on this. And then I said, well, let me just study in Nepal. And then I went to White House.
In Banishore.
Yeah, in Banishore.
Yeah.
And that was like my two fun years, because I was like, oh my God, like it's 11th and 12th, but let me just have fun in Nepal. So it was fun. It was a lot of fun. I did study. I mean, it wasn't like I didn't study. I was like an average kid in school. Mm. It wasn't like I was the most studious girl. I studied. I passed. There were some subjects I was really good at. I was really good at English, but I was really good at, really bad at math and science. So I had my fair share of fun. And then while studying that, I was also studying hotel management. Mm. So then I thought it was a really good idea. You know, back in the day, the whole issue was that even today, I think there is not much of an outlet or a school or college for kids to pursue art. And that is my biggest problem in Nepal, is that I was an artist through and through from when I was a kid, but I couldn't pursue it because there is no school of arts in Nepal. Yes. You know, either you have to be a doctor and an engineer or, you know,
lawyer, like, or business study commerce.
No, a business person. Like, you could not pursue art. Art is always looked at as hobby. Obviously, it didn't stop me from pursuing what I wanted to pursue. But then, you know, like, I would have loved to go to an art school and pursue music.
Yeah.
Because that was something I was very interested in as a kid, you know, as a young child, I would always sing my way to impress people. So, so like, you know, singing was my way of just like, you know, being. It was almost like breathing for me, but I couldn't do it. So, and hotel management was the subject I studied. And I was like, well, let me see if I could go to hotel management college in India. And then my mom was like, you know, there's this very good hotel management college that is affiliated with Taj and University of Huddersfield and the UK. So it'll be a really good opportunity. And then, you know, you could try it out and then you could see if you like it or not. And then I said, fine. And then I gave my exams and I got through. And then I went to University of Huddersfield, IHMA, Institute of Hotel Management, Aurangabad. That's my journey to my university.
And how do you go from that to just saying like, oh, actually I'm interested more in modeling and let me start applying to all these different global agencies, mind you, not just like the agencies in India, but just like, you know what, let me just apply to all international agencies.
You know, like, see, I told you I'm a child at my heart, you know, I am a very curious person. I am very spontaneous. I'm a Sagittarius. You know, at the end of the day, the heart wants what it wants. You have to listen to the heart. If you listen to your mind a lot, then you become a machine. You know, you have to let your heart live and you have to allow it to show you what you truly want and who you truly are. So I allowed, in the course of 4 years while I was studying hotel management, I realized that it was like a really rigorous course that I was studying, and I wasn't really into it. My heart wasn't into it. My mind wasn't really into it. Mm. And I asked myself, what would it take for me to finally experience some sort of freedom in being who I am and then not having to depend on anyone? Ever since I was a kid, I was interested in music, but I was also interested in fashion a lot. I would dress up as a kid and then go to parties and stuff. I'd make sure that I'm looking good. Yeah. And, you know, like all the hip stuff the Nepali kids were wearing, I'd make sure I was wearing that. Even though we grew up with like barely any money, I'd always save up money, like just Bombay Kutika and all of that, go Dachina.
Yeah.
I would save up and then make sure that I bought my favorite thing. So, in college, I'd watch these like beautiful fashion, you know, we had internet, Wi-Fi, I'd get on my computer and watch these like fashion shows, and then Giselle and Karlie Kloss, and then all incredible, incredible women, like walking down the runway and then looking sexy and then making their own shit, making their own money, making their own life, and not having to answer to anybody. They were beautiful, young, intelligent, smart women who were paving the way for their own selves, you know? They were just, and that was my idea always of, you know, being my own person. How am I going to experience freedom now? Freedom to me was being my own person, making my own career, making my own life, not having anyone's decision, you know, kind of direct where I want to go. I needed to be fully, authentically me in whatever I chose, all of my choices. So that's how I decided. I was like, okay, I have completed 4 years of my college. I'm not happy in this. I, in fact, had a job offer from Taj, and I kind of said no to that. And I was like, listen, I'm not coming. They've also given me the position. People were, you know, like next week supposed to go on training to Mumbai. I didn't show up to my training. Instead, I applied to different various agencies around the world. And I, and for 2 months, I never heard back, or I heard back, you know, saying that I wasn't the right fit, or like I was rejected by many, many agencies. And then I didn't really lose hope because I knew who I was. And I went ahead and applied even more. And then Wilhelmina answered back, and they said, we'd love for you to try out and see what happens. And then they did all of, you know, started doing my paperwork and got the visas ready. And then the next month, I knew, I went back to Nepal for 10 days. And then like the next, very next month, I was ready, up and gone to New York. So that's my life from like 0 to 10, like in one month. I was like, wow, I was in Nepal a month ago, and then like a month later, now I'm in New York, like the one of the best cities in the world, and I'm, you know, having a life that I've always wanted to live, you know, living a life of freedom. Freedom is what I value the most in my life. Freedom is what drives me. So if anywhere I don't feel that freedom lives, I kind of move out of that place, move into freedom somewhere else.
Now, becoming one of the first Nepali model to be signed by such international model agencies, it's a win in itself, right? So like when people hear it, oh my God, Varsha got signed by so-and-so, she's like this model now. But I'm guessing that's also when most of your hard work actually started.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Because you think that's the top, right?
Yeah, but that's the top, no.
But that's actually when it all started for you.
Yeah. You know, when I first got here, it was just very, very, very tough, because I came here thinking like, oh my God, like I have made it. Like I have chosen a path that is not approved for like the Nepali society and the culture in Nepal. And everybody thinks that I'm going to fail, but I'm going to prove them wrong. And I'm here in New York. I'm going to make this happen. But like at first I was like, oh my God, I've made it. But then I went to the agency, and then they were like, well, you know, we have a lot of work to do. And, you know, we have to groom you for the fashion week. And, you know, you have to work on your walk. You have to work on so many things. And, you know, and then things that are consciously like walking, the conscious things like on walk, or like, you know, the way you dress and all of that. But there was so much subconscious working that I had to go through, which no one really taught me. Subconscious was about, you know, like the, you know, human behavior and how you should be and how you, you know, because you'd be yourself, and then, you know, then later on realize, 2 or 3 years realize, oh my God, why did I act this way, or why did I behave that way? If I had did this or that, then I would have probably gotten a better outcome. But then, you know, these are called subconscious learning. There's a learning process, you know, that goes on. So I got onto that learning process, and then along with that, I just realized that there's so much to do. And I was, you know, I'm the only child, and I have no brothers and sisters, and I have no family in America. So I had to live in a rented apartment in Manhattan by the agency. And I had over the year, you know, collected a lot of debt. I was in debt for $30,000 that I couldn't even clear for two and a half years. So it took a lot of, you know, like hustling. That's when the real hustler in me came to life. You know, I feel like I hustled a lot. I worked side jobs. I ate out of halal carts. I mean, it was just like, you know, it was a lot of hard work. But then what you truly gain when you live in New York is how to be a hustler and how to really navigate and how to, you know, it makes you so wise and it makes you so strong. And you, if I honestly feel like now I can go live anywhere in the world and I won't have a problem. But it was, you know, and especially also I went through a lot of, I went through a time in fashion where diversity was not very much accepted. So imagine going through, living through a time in the industry, fashion industry, where diversity is not accepted. Obviously, I won't have the jobs that I desire, you know, and then having to work so much and make very, very little money. It was very hard for me. First 3 or 4 years were hell. It was very hard. And then later on, I switched agencies and things became better. So over the course of time, things got better. But you really have to understand that when you get into something, there's always going to be a lot of challenges. It's just up to you to understand whether you want these challenges or not. And for me, there was no looking back. I had to make a life and a living for myself by hook or by crook. I had to do it. There was no looking back. There was no going back and saying, hey, mom, it didn't work out. Can I have some money? No. You know, I'm not. And I was never, in my mindset, I was never supposed to do that. You know, in my mindset, I was always supposed to move onward and upward. That's what I had promised myself. I said, I'm only going onward and upward. And if there are challenges, that's fine. I'm going to face them, but I'm only moving forward and upward.
Because when you hear the word model, or when you think of a model, the first word that comes to anyone's mind is glamorous, you know?
Yeah, glamorous.
Oh my God, like she's walking like these runways, she's in that city doing this, like modeling for this brand and et cetera. So like you never see all these struggles because people don't talk about that.
Yeah.
So thank you for sharing your story with us.
Oh yeah, I'm never afraid or shy of sharing my struggles because first of all, I'm not the first person who went through it. I'm sure there are many people who came from different countries and went through it. And I'm not going to be the last person who's going to go through this. Yeah. Maybe they are going to go through struggles, but in a lesser amount of what I went through. But everybody has some sort of struggle in their life. And I think the more I share it, the more people kind of feel like they're not alone. So I feel like I have to share it. You know, it's kind of like a responsibility.
Yeah, and I think that really helps people as well.
Yeah, for sure.
Now, walking all these different runways in cities all over the world and gracing covers of all these magazines, Varsha, what's been your highlight of your modeling journey so far?
See, honestly, I like to look at modeling as like an outlet that has given me a platform. You know, it's like a huge outlet that has given me a name, that has allowed me to be and it has kind of put the spotlight on me, you know, and everybody is able to understand and know who I am. And modeling has given me so much of, you know, it's given me a lot of perspective as well on life, like what is important to me, what's not. It's shown me how to not only be who I am, but also navigate through the person I am. Let's say, like, I have faced so many obstacles. Now I feel like I'm able to better navigate so other obstacles that come to me. It's almost like a stepping stone for what I truly want, you know. And modeling has made me financially free, and it's given me so much financial freedom that I can now hence choose to do what I want to do. Modeling has given me a face, a platform to, you know, to be who I am. And it has also given me experience of a lifetime of learning, of all the people that I got to meet, of all the traveling that I got to do. I mean, you know, and all the creatives I got to work with, it's taught me so much creatively, you know, that now I can take that and add on to what I love doing, which is music. You know, like modeling has given me so much perspective, so much, you know, creative knowledge and work ethic and discipline. And that now I can take all of that, all of the things that I learned from modeling, and put it all into music, and put everything, all of my experiences, whether good or bad, either on my lyrics or my work ethic or whatever it is, however it reflects through, that I, you know, I can now take that and put it onto my music. So modeling has really been like a teacher for me, you know, a mentor. I've never physically had, you know, a physical mentor. Life has been a mentor, and modeling has been a huge part of my life. So it is one of my biggest mentors. It's taught me so much. It's also taught me a lot of things about self-love, because there's so much criticism that happens in modeling. People tend to nitpick on the littlest things, not just people, but like the whole industry is kind of like focused on perfection, you know? So the whole idea of perfection is different for me now, because I, you know, like I have really, really learned how to love myself, because, you know, you, in modeling, you kind of tend to, as a young model, I tend to expect love and validation from the external sources. And then as you go on, you learn that, you know, these external sources can never validate you.
No.
What really validates you is you, you know. So these are the things that I've really, really learned. And these are like my golden, like, eggs that I will, you know, like, forever, like, have in my body. Now that self-love is kind of what I project onto everything that I do in my life. I always put myself first. I always value myself, and I never settle. So these are the things that the modeling has taught me so much about these things.
Yeah, you know how to stand up for yourself.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Standing up for myself, being independent, knowing how to make money, hustling, you know. Knowing how to be able, you know, navigate from one person to another, speaking to everyone in the room, how to speak to people from all walks of life, you know, learning to be a people's person, which I really was not as a child because of all the difficult times that I went through.
Yeah.
But then I've kind of now become a people's person, maybe not fully completely, but now I know how to like speak to everybody from all walks of life.
I love that you mentioned how you don't want to give in to external validation, because if you do, then, like, for example, that external validation might say, yes, they approve, but then there might be other external factors that might build up upon that, and it's just like a continuous
vicious cycle.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, like, it never ends. So, I think you need to start loving yourself first, right? Like, as cliche as that sounds, like, you've heard it so many times in movies, in shows, in books and stuff, but you don't really understand it unless you go through it yourself.
Yeah, 100%. That's what I try to portray in my life and in all the things I do as well. Self-love is so important to me. Self-love is something that was taught to me by life. So, now I want to kind of, you know, feed it in the things I do or the art I make.
And I think that portrays so well in your song, Maya. Oh my God, Varsha, when I heard that song, like, I couldn't stop humming the tune for days. I just like be like doing something, and I just try hop because it's so catchy, and because it has that meaning as well. You can't stop but relating yourself to that song.
Yeah.
And so
thank you.
What was the process behind coming up with Maya? I know you started the Sita Virgin Band in 2018.
Yeah.
So was that just a gradual process for you to move into producing something of your own?
Yeah. I think that, you know, everything is a process, like how modeling was a process for me. So is music, but music more so. I just knew that I wanted to do music. So I dove in right away and I did it. I think Sita Virgin was started as a band in 2018 because me and this amazing guitarist who I still work with, Rob Mastriani, we got together, we met and we got together and we were like, oh my God, you're a guitarist and I love singing. So let's just see what, you know, like where we can take this and how we can collaborate. So it was a beautiful collaborative work between me and Rob. And then we created like some songs. We created one song and then we went on to creating like 8 or 9 songs. And we were like, oh my God, can we just start a band? Then we started a band and I thought of this name, Sita Virgin, because it just came to me and I was like, oh my God, this is one of the coolest names I've ever thought. Let's just do it. Let's create a band. And we created this band and we created a few songs. And I was like, wow, this is really, really good. But while we were working together, it just hit me that, you know, like I love working with Rob, but I honestly have always dreamt of creating my own sounds, whether even if it was like chord progression of a guitar. October last year, I started learning how to play the guitar. And now I'm at a point where I can create chord progressions. I'm not a professional guitarist, but I can create chord progressions to the vocals that I sing and then now form a song. And, you know, so that was a
journey
for me, you know, like from not like just singing to Rob and then creating that band to understanding that now I want to create my own sounds and I want to see if, because you know when you have a certain, you know, vocal melody going on, you want a certain chord, but sometimes you're able to communicate it to the person you're working with, sometimes you're not. And I didn't want that gap going on. I wanted it to be very fluid. So along with the chord structure that I created in the guitar, I wanted the vocals to kind of flow with it as well. And in order to fully be in sync with one another, I knew I had to do it by myself. So then I took on this whole idea of solo artist and going out there and really putting myself out there. Whatever happens, happens. You know, if the chords come out, great. If they don't, then it's totally fine. And then slowly, like, I communicated it to Rob. Rob was totally okay with it. And then I started making songs. And I remember, like, last year in August, we went to this Bollywood party with me. It was me, Prabhu, Sajjan, Arugya, and, like, few others. And then we went to this Bollywood party in Queens and then we had partied all night. It was so much fun. I loved it. And the next morning, like that night, I went home, I slept. I woke up next morning, like literally 8 a.m. or something, humming a tune. And I was like, man, this is an incredible tune. Let me just record it. Any tune I think of, like I just start humming, I take my phone right away and record it, because if I don't, then I completely forget it. So I woke up like humming this tune. Na, 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 na. So I was just humming it. And then slowly I recorded it. And then it formed that whole, then it came down to that whole chorus of Maya.
Yeah.
Maya. Na, 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 na. So that whole thing was just formed in that very first few minutes. And I was like, oh, this could be an incredible song if I just add verses to this song, verse melody. So my process is like, melodies always come in first and then the words come in, because I'm a very melody person. So I formed the verse melodies, then obviously the chorus's melody was already there, and then the whoo was already there, and then three verses, and then the song, the melody part of the song was ready, and then I had to move on to words. For me, believe it or not, very hard, because I grew up in a boarding school where we had to speak English the whole time. So my Nepali is just horrible, and I'm embarrassed of, like, you know, my Nepali diction. I'm working on it every single day, and I'm happy that I'm doing Nepali music, because it really challenges me to learn Nepali and Nepali words and be really good at the diction and enunciations and everything. So then I sat down. It took me one whole day I took to write down the words and everything. And the song was formed in that day.
Wow.
And then, I was like, oh my God, this is incredible. Then we started working on the chord structure. Then I was like, let me see what chord structure works. And then I brought it to Rob as well. And then Rob helped me a little bit with the chord structure. And then slowly we were able to form chord structure in the entire song. And we even performed it in my at my show in August. I think it was like August 18th or something. And we even performed it. And then, you know, everyone in the crowd was like, oh my God, this song is really good. And that gave me so much happiness, because I was like, oh my God, I've created this song while I was asleep, and it came to me in my sleep. I created an entire song and then now people love it. That means I could do this. I can do this. So I feel like when you have a gut or an instinct that tells you, no, do it. And then you really put yourself out there and you're like, okay, I'm at the mercy of you, my instincts, intuitions, and intellect. I'm at your mercy. Now you show me the way. Then, you know, it really shows you the way. And look at how it showed me the way. I was sleeping. I woke up. I had the song. You know, so life is so beautiful. You just have to trust yourself. You have to believe that you can do whatever you want to do. Put yourself out there. Be vulnerable. Vulnerability is amazing, you know. Mm. I put myself out there when it came to music, even though I didn't know how to play the guitar. I said, listen, I'm going to learn along the way. I'm going to do it because, you know, music chooses you. You can't choose music. You can't choose to be a singer or a guitarist. It chooses you. And I knew that music had chosen me. I doesn't, you know, vocals, I had it in place. I just had to know how to, you know, put chord structure, and that it's not rocket science. I just had to sit down a couple of hours and learn. So I did that and I was able to just like, you know, the universe, along with my instincts, intuitions, and intellect, they were all in harmony, and they were able to pave this path for me. And I just went for it, and it kept going and going. And that's how Maya happened, you know. Mm. And the same thing happened with self-love thing. It was just, you know, experiences that I had had in life that I was able to put into a little, you know, short, you know, video, and then, you know, a little short story and the video and came to what it is today. It's just life experiences.
Mm. I cannot sing to save my life. I am so out of tune. It's not even fun.
We're all bathroom singers. That's where it started for me.
I'm glad your bathroom singing resulted into something amazing, but I think I'm just going to stick to the bathroom. So for me, when I hear these behind the scenes experience for like all the artists, I'm just, wow, you wake up with a song. It's amazing.
Yeah, no, I mean, honestly, it's just, I listen to a lot of opera because she's very inspiring to me. And I listen to a lot of her.
Do you listen to her podcast?
Yeah, I listen to her podcast a lot. I watch her YouTube videos. I religiously follow opera because she is like one of the most inspiring figures in my life.
Yes.
And, you know, being in a place where she is, being the race she is, being the kind of woman she is, the kind of things she's accomplished in life, has truly really inspired me to kind of start from where I am and accomplish my dreams and my vision, my goals. And I think it's either her or it's like John Assaraf, which I really follow. He's also a motivational speaker. He says everybody has some sort of Michael Jordan talent in them, and our purpose in life is to figure out what is that Michael Jordan talent in us, allow that to drive us to our whole being, to our whole selves, you know.
Yeah.
So we're all born whole. I believe we're all born whole. But then at some point, you know, due to the societal norms and the rules and the regulations and whatever, we kind of lose ourselves. We take on things that we're not, and we lose parts of us, you know, we shed parts of us that we truly are.
That makes us us.
Yeah, that makes us us. So I believe that, you know, like the Michael Jordan talent that we have, it brings us back to who we truly wholly were, you know, and that's our way. That's our purpose. Our purpose is to figure out who we truly are. And we figure that out by figuring out our Michael Jordan talent, you know, because that's life. It must make you feel like, oh my God, I'm in heaven right now. Cause that's what I feel like when I'm singing. I feel like I'm truly connecting to the higher power, and like I'm out of this world.
Yeah. You've done so many things, Varsha, in terms of breaking barriers just for yourself, reaching for the stars and actually getting there and killing it. What drives you?
What drives me? I think, honestly, I don't want to like sound selfish, but this is what I have felt from life, is that we only have one life. We're all spiritual beings, right? I personally think that I begged the higher power or God or the universe, whatever you want to call it, said, listen, God, please let me just go and have a human experience. Please. I just want to have an experience of being a human being. Just let me. Mm-hmm. God said, well, you know, there's a lot of suffering, Varsha. There's going to be a lot of suffering, no matter how rich you are, how famous you are, how privileged you are, whatever situation you're in. There is a lot of suffering. You will still feel very sad about certain things. And there's going to be many things that are going to make you sad. And I begged him and I said, no, him or her. And I said, no, please just let me go and have this human experience. So then he or she said, well, your wish is my command. I let you go have your human experience. So my goal as a human being is to fully live my human experience. Mm-hmm. And if it means breaking barriers, I'm going to break barriers. If it means that I'm not living up to someone's expectations, I'm sorry. I'm here to have my human experience. And if something attracts me to it, something, you know, makes me desireful to it, I'm mm-hmm. going to go towards it. I'm going to be that child that I was when I was a kid. I was curious. I'm going to be that, and I'm going to gravitate towards everything that potentially will fulfill me or potentially will, you know, like make me realize my human experience. So I think my driving force is the human experience. My driving force is wanting the desire to fully experience and wear out my human experience, almost like this. Oprah says it, there's nothing left in me to like finally know who I am, you know, there's nothing left in me to experience more, you know, that's how I want to exit this world, by nothing left to experience anymore, you know? That's what I want to do.
Yeah.
This is my problem with the world. I mean, you know, the world is a world, they will be what they want to be, but I feel like you can't be one thing. You just gotta do everything you can. This world, this life is about that. Life is about being a thousand, a million things, you know, and experiencing it. Life is about experience. And the more you experience, the more rich you are, the more rich your life is, you know. So the experiences of life, of being a human being, really drives me.
Yeah.
Because I know at some point I'm gonna leave this world. And what am I leaving this world with? You know, just being a fashion model, just being a musical artist, just being, I don't know.
There's so many things you can do.
There's so many things. We're unbelievable. We're one of the biggest, the most gifted creatures in life. And we have, the more we realize that, the more we're like, you know, the more limitless we are. We can do anything we want in life. We just have to put ourselves out there. Just put yourself out there and, you know, manifest and attract and meet and love and experience and wear it out, wear the human experience out, and then leave, you know. It's almost like when I was young, I used to drink, and then my friends would be like, oh my God, you're drinking so much. Yes, you gotta drink until you're drunk. If you're not drunk, what is the point of drinking? Oh God, that's the point of life. It's like, if you're not living, what's the point of being a human being? It's to live. Life drives me, you know?
Yeah. I love your philosophy. And doing this podcast, that's one thing I have realized that for myself as well, that you can't just be one thing, right? Like when you grow up, you think, oh, I'm going to be X, I'm going to be Y, I'm going to be this. But then, and then you get stuck in that mindset that you can only do that and you can't go for something else. Yeah. But speaking to so many personalities, doing so many great things in their own fields all around the world, despite their circumstances, I get so inspired and motivated by these stories such as yourselves, because you think, oh, just because you turn 30 doesn't mean you're old anymore.
Yeah,
you can still do so many things. Even if you're married and if you're 60 years old, you can still do things.
Yeah.
You know, you can, if you wanted to go into acting, you can still do that. If you wanted to go for politics, go for it. There's so many things you can do, and you know, nothing's stopping us. It's just your mind that's sort of telling you, oh, you're too old for that. Oh, yeah. You shouldn't be doing this, you know. Yeah. So I love that you live this and you breathe this and that drives you. It's so good to hear.
You know, I feel like age and all these restrictions are just marketing gimmicks, you know. They just make people, you know, they feed off of people's insecurities. Otherwise, how do you make money? But don't let people, don't allow all these barriers and glass ceilings to kind of hold you down. Everybody has insecurities. You know, I have insecurities of my own. Like, you know, I'm aging. You know, I can't bring time back. I can't be that kid again. But what do I have? I have a whole life ahead of me, you know, like everything ahead of me. Aging is just like a marketing gimmick. You know, we're all kids at heart if we want to be, you know. I'm a kid. I'm a total kid. But like, I mean, it's just about the feeling. The outside is just, you know, it's almost like we've been given to be human. We've been given like those, what is that movie? Avengers, how they have their, you know, their outside.
The shields.
This is what it is. It's, you know, if it ages, it ages. But we are all souls. We're all supposed to be living here, enjoying the human experience, you know.
Exactly.
And don't buy into all of these, you know, stupid marketing gimmicks of you're old, you're too young, you're too old, you're too this, you're too. That's all bullshit, you know.
Exactly.
We are souls, and we're beautiful. We're one of the greatest creatures that ever lives in this world. So we better make the most of being human beings.
Now, Varsha, I know you've been really busy the last few months working on your EP as well. What can we expect from this?
So this is a very small EP. This is a 4-song EP. This is not a big album as much as I would have liked it to. I realized how much of a work it is. I've been working on these 4 songs these past 7 or 8 months, and it has been very, very like self-revolutionary for me, because I've understood the extent of work that goes on and how much of myself can I bring to a certain song. So I have honestly brought everything of me into all these songs, you know, whether it's like my vulnerability or my ability to just like combine multiple instruments and my vocals, and then, you know, like create an instrumental song. There are 4 songs which are very different from one another. Obviously, there's my acoustic, which everyone has been waiting for. But then the other 3 songs are so different and differently kind of produced. And I think you're going to be able to see, which I really have learned so much from life, is like to be vulnerable in order to really clear yourself of insecurities and the shadows that you've been hiding inside. You really have to dig deep inside and live with them, and then kind of have closure with them in order to free it. I have sort of done that with all the vulnerabilities that I have as a person, and I've gone inside all the feelings that I have kept buried inside of me. Music for me is to heal me, and in the hopes of that, hopefully when people listen to it, heals other people. So I have allowed myself to do that within this 4 songs. So so that's what you can expect from this album, is like vulnerabilities, and then, you know, obviously love, and there's always a love song. But yeah,
love it.
Yeah.
Now, one of the things for this podcast is also to really redefine this idea of success, because growing up, society tells you this one idea of success, but later on, you unlearn and learn and figure out, well, that's not really what I think success is. You being in so many different fields, being outside of Nepal, what does success mean to you now?
Oh my God, that's such a hard question. Success to me is when I truly acknowledge who I am. And as a child, I grew up very, very, very insecure of who I was and, you know, my accomplishments. Or, you know, I wasn't the brightest kid in school, and I wasn't really appreciated. I was bullied a lot in school. So success to me is kind of acknowledging who I am. Coming to a point where I acknowledge who I am, all of my insecurities, and me being okay with it, and going out in the world. And these are actually all shadows, you know, shadows we try to hide in us and not show to the world. Success to me is like me accepting fully who I am and being who I am. And if I and when I show up in the world, it is for me that my shadow comes with me. And so like all the insecurities and all of the things that I had been hiding and hating and putting aside and brushing aside, I wear it on my shoulder and show myself to the world. And I say, this is who I am. You like it, great. You don't like it, great. So that is a piece of work that I've been working on ever since I came across my shadows and ever since I realized how much they affect my decision making or my thought processes or my core beliefs. So like success to me is like owning all my shadows and really redefining who I truly am. And I am an incredible human being that is absolutely capable of having, being, and doing anything I want. So that for me is success, is not the external validation, but the internal realization of who I truly am and what my potential is. I think that truly is success for me, because it took me a long ass time to get to a place like this. And I'm not saying that I've arrived, but I've definitely come to a solid ground of where I understand that I define who I am. I understand who I am, and I know my insecurities, and I understand it. I understand my shadows. And I'm not afraid of them. I'm not afraid to acknowledge them and be like, okay, I'm this and that. I'm more than happy to welcome my shadow, wear it on my sleeves, and be like, this is who I am, and you know, like, show up in the world wholly, fully.
Yeah. And I think that comes a lot from self-love as well, because you acknowledging yourself, every part, good or bad, and then just loving it and accepting it is the first part, right? And that's great.
Absolutely. It's like my number one form of success, I think. And, you know, I want to leave this world as whole as I was born, as whole. I want my soul to feel as whole as it felt when it was born. So I think that's what success is to me. The rest of the materialistic parts, I think, you know, money, power, fame, these things are all man-made, you know. These things are like what man has defined to in order to get us kind of engaged into life. But like, what we really were here for was to enjoy life, you know, like, and money and you know, fame and power is all energy. The more happy and successful and great you feel about yourself, the more money you attract. And, you know, the lower your energy is, the less money and fame and power you attract. It's all energy. It's all energy. So, you know, the more happy and content and strong and confident I am with myself, that to me is success. So as long as I have that, I have everything else coming to me, you know.
That's lovely. Now, just to wrap things up as well, Varsha, if there's any advice you could give someone that is struggling with their path or struggling to find their passion, what would that be?
You know, do what you love. I think that's the most important thing is, and if someone is struggling with, you know, finding their path, or like someone is struggling to understand who they are, you know, I think somewhere that I was as well, that was a part of my life that I was struggling with as well at some point. So what I truly did was I started singing, started posting my videos of myself singing. I think I was in London in 2017. I started singing and posting videos of me singing Frank Sinatra or whatever on Instagram, and then people appreciated it, and I was like, you know, it's funny because I love singing and I never sang all of these years. So I kind of reacquainted myself with my music, and that's what gave me freedom and power. And that's what allowed me to understand my path and gave me a lot of clarity. I would suggest someone who's struggling to get in touch with and reacquaint themselves with what they love doing as a child. And that's what will kind of make them, you know, understand who they are. And when you understand who you are, your path becomes a little clearer, because you start doing what you love, and then you start figuring out, okay, how do I make money from doing what I love? And then how do I make this a career? Okay, now how do I take this higher, and how do I maintain it, and how do I get people to engage? So it starts with what you love, I think, and then it moves up, you know, to an even greater level of how do I make money, how do I be successful at this. So I think people who are struggling, just figure out what you love. Put yourself out there. Tell the universe. Tell your instincts. Your instincts, intuitions, and intellect are your guiding light within you. They guide you. They show you directions. To ask them, show me the direction. Show, ask God to show you direction. They will realign. And just put yourself out there. Tell them that you're mercy in your in their mercy, and then a path will show up. It's bound to happen. It's always happened for me, and I'm nothing more special. I'm as much of a human as they are. If it happens for me, it happens for them. That's how it happens, you know. And I think one of the greatest things in Nepali culture, our families have taught us, always to pray. Praying is amazing. You know, it's like, it's I think it's a mechanism to make you believe in something, because that belief is something that will help us, to enable us to achieve what we want. And you know, that has really helped me a lot, because believing, when you believe in something, it happens, you know.
It grounds you as well.
Yeah, definitely. So I think growing up in Nepal, I went to different temples, but what the whole purpose of going into those temples was like really believing in something.
Yeah.
So when you believe that there is something that, or an energy or a power or whatever that's helping you, you realize that when you pray, it comes, you know, that energy is mobilized, and you know, it's flowing itself to you. Yeah, I would definitely suggest them. But you know, they have to find what they love. If you don't love something, and if you're doing it just for the heck of doing it or out of ego, it'll never work out.
Well, thank you again so much for your time, Varsha. Sure. It's been absolutely amazing to chat with you. The curiosity you have, the love for life, the importance of self-love. Like, I could keep going on about how this chat has been so inspiring to me.
Thank you so much for having me. It was so nice talking to you. And you're such an inspiring listener. And also, like, the feedback, the kind of the responses you give me, you know, it allows me to kind of speak more about it. And the kind of questions you asked me were also very stimulating. I really had to go back in there and be like, this question is amazing. So let me go back and let me kind of form this question and think about it. It was really good questions. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. But I'm so excited to hear the new songs. And
I'm really excited to put it out there. I mean, you know, it's something that's really important to me, a journey that's shown me who I am. So hopefully everyone else will love it as much as they've loved Maya. So
what a way to end this year.
Thank you so much for having me, and all the best with everything that you want to do.
Yeah, we do.
I can't believe it is already the end of 2020, and this is our final episode for the year. I truly love creating content for our community. And even more than that, you are out there listening to it. There are still so many stories to uncover, and I look forward to sharing them with you in the new year. If you would like to nominate yourself or someone in the community, please message us on Instagram at hamro.yatra or email askhamroyatra@gmail.com. Your support motivates me to keep going on, which is why this isn't Mero Yatra, but Hamro Yatra. Thank you again, and see you in 2021.